content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various websites that will be coming up on my feed, starting with from thearc.org, that's thearc.org. Texas and eight other states renew attack on Section 504 and the right of disabled people to live in their communities. Dateline January 28, 2026. On January 23, 2026, Texas and eight other states, Alaska, Florida, Indiana, Kansas, Louisiana, Missouri, Montana, and South Dakota, renewed their attack on Section 504 and the integration mandate. The integration mandate is a requirement under Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act and the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA. It allows people with disabilities to receive services in the community rather than in institutions. It was upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court in its landmark Olmstead versus L.C., Lois Curtis, decision in 1999. We cannot let these states take away that right. The nine states say that a rule about the integration mandate published by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, is unlawful and unconstitutional and should be blocked. The HHS rule says that state and local governments and any entity that gets HHS dollars must serve people with disabilities in the most integrated setting appropriate. The rule also says that entities may violate Section 504 when they place disabled people at serious risk of unnecessary institutionalization. The U.S. Department of Justice and many federal courts have said the same thing, that an entity can violate Section 504 when it fails to serve disabled people in the most integrated setting appropriate, or when it puts them at serious risk of institutionalization. If the states are successful in their challenge, it may be harder for disabled people to enforce their right to live and participate in the community. As a result, more people with disabilities may be forced into institutions when they can and want to live in the community instead. The disability community has fought long and hard for strong disability rights laws, and we cannot allow them to be weakened. The state's latest attack on disability rights is a revised version of the lawsuit Texas v. Kennedy, formerly Texas v. Becerra, B-E-C-E-R-R-A. In the earlier version of the case, Texas and 16 other states argued that Section 504 itself is unconstitutional and challenged updated Section 504 rules published by HHS in 2024. After outrage and advocacy from the disability community, the states withdrew their claim that Section 504 is unconstitutional. The remaining states continue to challenge the updated rules. Eight states recently dropped out of litigation after HHS proposed a package of three regulations aimed at the transgender community, including a regulation categorically excluding gender dysphoria from the protections of Section 504. Many disability groups, including the undersigned, have opposed this change to the Section 504 regulations. In the new complaint, the states are now asking the court to declare that the entire Section 504 rule is unlawful, stop HHS from enforcing the entire rule, and stop HHS from telling states they cannot take actions that place people with disabilities at serious risk of institutionalization. What can I do to help? We call on everyone in the nine states bringing this new attack on our autonomy and independence, Texas, Alaska, Florida, Indiana, Kansas, Louisiana, Missouri, Montana, and South Dakota, to urge their governors and attorneys general to withdraw this lawsuit and stop attacking the right of people with disabilities to live and participate in their communities. Information about how to contact the attorneys general in these states can be found at the hot link for dredf.org/protect-504. This update was created by the ARC of the United States, Baselin Center for Mental Health Law, Center for Public Representation, Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund, Justice in Aging, the National Health Law Program, with contributions by Allison Barkoff, Hirsch Health Law and Policy Associate Professor, George Washington University. From ACB.org, announcing a lawsuit from the NFB and other plaintiffs. lawsuit brought in response to challenges against the Randolph Shepherd Program, posted February 2, 2026. The National Federation of the Blind, NFB, and several named plaintiffs have filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Department of Education, responding to the notice put out by Secretary McMahon in December of 2025. The notice, which ACB promptly responded to, placed a hold on Randolph Shepherd vendors to prevent them from providing vending services in Army facilities. The lawsuit was just filed by NFB and related parties and argues that the decision violates the Administrative Procedures Act, APA. ACB will follow the case closely and report back on what happens next. Here are further details from the NFB.org. National Federation of the Blind and Blind Entrepreneurs file federal lawsuit challenging Army-wide waiver of Randolph Shepherd Act, posted Friday, January 30, 2026. Dateline Washington, D.C., the National Federation of the Blind, the National Association of Blind Merchants, and several blind entrepreneurs today filed a federal lawsuit challenging a decision by the United States Department of Education that purports to eliminate the Randolph Shepherd Act priority for blind vendors to operate dining facilities on United States Army installations nationwide. The complaint, filed in the United States District Court for the District of Maryland, asks the court to set aside a December 23, 2025 action by the Secretary of Education approving what the department described as a limitation on the Randolph Shepherd Act as applied to Army dining facility contracts. Plaintiffs contend that the decision exceeds the Secretary's statutory authority, violates required procedures, and is arbitrary and capricious. The Randolph Shepherd Act, passed in 1936 and strengthened by Congress in 1974, requires federal agencies to give priority to blind vendors in the operation of vending facilities, including cafeterias on federal property. For more than 30 years, blind vendors have successfully operated Army dining facilities across the country, often winning awards from the military itself. There's a quote, "The Randolph Shepherd Act does not authorize the Secretary of Education to waive the law for an entire federal agency," said Mark Riccobono, president of the National Federation of the Blind. Congress created and later enhanced this program to expand economic opportunity for blind entrepreneurs. The Department of Education cannot erase the work of America's lawmakers through a sweeping administrative finding based on anecdote, speculation, or policy disagreement, and should not exclude blind people from shaping the future direction of the program. The National Federation of the Blind stands with the blind business owners who are providing outstanding and award-winning service to members of our nation's armed forces every day, and we are determined to reverse this unlawful, unwarranted, and unjust action. The Department of Education's action marks the first time the Secretary has approved any limitation under the Randolph Shepherd Act, and the first time such a limitation has been applied on a nationwide categorical basis. The lawsuit says that the Act authorizes only narrowly tailored limitations on the placement of or operation of specific facilities, not a wholesale elimination of the priority established by Congress. In announcing the Army-wide waiver, the department cited generalized claims regarding cost, delay, and performance. However, the department did not publish any supporting documentation for those claims, despite an express statutory requirement to do so. According to the lawsuit, the decision rests on vague and anecdotal assertions that are contradicted by decades of successful performance by blind vendors operating Army dining facilities. If allowed to stand, the department's action would jeopardize the livelihoods of blind vendors currently serving on Army installations, displace hundreds of employees, and undermine state programs that rely on revenue generated through Randolph Shepherd contracts to support blind entrepreneurs nationwide. The lawsuit follows a previously issued statement by the National Federation of the Blind expressing grave concern about the Department of Education's decision and its implications for blind vendors and the integrity of the Randolph Shepherd program. The plaintiffs are represented by the Baltimore law firm Brown, Goldstein, and Levy. About the National Federation of the Blind. The National Federation of the Blind, headquartered in Baltimore, defends the rights of blind people of all ages and provides information and support to families with blind children, older Americans who are losing vision, and more. Founded in 1940, the NFB is the transformative membership and advocacy organization of blind Americans with affiliates, chapters, and divisions in the 50 states, Washington, D.C., and Puerto Rico. We believe in the hopes and dreams of blind people and work together to transform them into reality. Learn more about our many programs and initiatives at nfb.org. Director of Communications, National Federation of the Blind. From MercuryNews.com, based out of the San Francisco Bay Area of California, a Bay Area blind woman asked for no damages when she sued for discrimination, but the county that let her legal saga drag on for 5 years is now settling for $1.2 million. Lisa Maria Martinez alleged that staff from the Alameda County Clerk Recorder's Office failed to provide her assistance when she was filing paperwork for her business. Article by Chase Hunter. When blind Union City resident Lisa Maria Martinez sought help from the Clerk Recorder's Office staff to file paperwork for her new business in 2019, she was repeatedly denied assistance, violating the Americans with Disability Act, ADA, a federal jury ruled. CRO staff members refused to assist Martinez with signing a fictitious business name form in 2019, stating that only the business owner could complete the legal paperwork, according to court documents. Though Martinez explained that she was unable to fill out the paper form on her own, court documents say CRO staff and managers refused to help Martinez until she left more than 90 minutes later. Martinez sued, and the legal dispute did not conclude until last week, when the Alameda County Board of Supervisors approved a $1.2 million settlement payment to her. While pleased with the victory, Martinez's lawyer, Tim Elder, expressed disbelief that the county let the case drag on for so long. Lisa Maria Martinez was willing to resolve this case 5 years ago for no damages, minimal legal fees, and the county of Alameda agreeing to change its policy, Elder told Bay Area News Group. Instead of following express federal guidance, the county dug in its heels on a nonsensical interpretation of the law and fought this case for 5 years. Under federal law, public and private entities must provide reasonable accommodations to people with disabilities to ensure they have equal opportunity to work and participate in public life, according to the ADA. For blind people such as Martinez, this may include having a staff member read or write on official forms under their direction. Her experience was time-wasting, frustrating, dehumanizing, and unnecessary. She would not have suffered it had the ACC provided her with auxiliary aids and services as legally required, Elder wrote to Alameda County Council Donna Ziegler and Clerk Recorder Melissa Wilk in November 2019. Martinez had previously sued Alameda County in a class action lawsuit in 2013 for failing to offer an accessible voting machine that provides audio assistance for sight-impaired people. A federal court ruled in October 2013 that Alameda County must ensure blind and visually impaired voters must be able to vote privately and independently during elections. In the 2019 lawsuit, Martinez sued Alameda County for discrimination. Elder said that his client did not seek damages for her lawsuit, only a policy change that would accommodate sight-impaired people like her. County Counsel Donna Ziegler's office fought the lawsuit instead, claiming that Martinez had asked for legal advice with her paperwork that would require a notary, which could not legally be fulfilled by a staff member. County officials did not respond to a request for comment on the case. The lawsuit was litigated until 2024, when a federal jury in San Francisco ruled in favor of Martinez and awarded her $30,500 in damages. The $1.2 million settlement approved by the Board of Supervisors represented legal fees incurred over the trial, according to Elder. I was faced with a choice, remain silent or fight against a clear injustice, Martinez said in a statement with the National Federation of the Blind in 2024 following the verdict. In choosing to fight, I risked being told my rights were different because I am blind, a risk worth taking to ensure no other blind person faces this kind of discrimination. Elder said the county's handling of the case was unacceptable. Alameda County lost this case on every issue, required a federal injunction to issue, and subjected taxpayers to over $1.2 million in avoidable legal expense, not including the money spent on the county's private losing defense firm, Elder said. The Board of Supervisors and citizens should be outraged at this overly litigious mishandling of a meritorious civil rights issue. From fightingblindness.org, Opus Genetics receives funding for gene therapy clinical trial for MERTK-related retinitis pigmentosa. Opus Genetics has announced the funding of a clinical trial evaluating OPG-X-MERTK, an investigational gene therapy for retinitis pigmentosa caused by mutations on the MERTK gene. The trial represents a significant step forward for patients with this rare form of inherited retinal disease, which currently has no approved treatments. The clinical trial will evaluate the safety, tolerability, and preliminary efficacy of a single subretinal injection of OPG-X-MERTK. The main trial site will be the Cleveland Clinic in Abu Dhabi, in collaboration with the Department of Health in Abu Dhabi and other local support groups. Mutations in the MERTK gene cause approximately 1-2% of cases of RP, representing thousands of individuals worldwide living with progressive vision loss that begins in childhood or early adulthood. Patients typically experience night blindness, peripheral vision loss, and eventual central vision loss. OPG-X-MERTK uses an adeno-associated virus, AAV, vector to deliver a functional copy of the MERTK gene directly to retinal cells, addressing the underlying genetic cause of the disease. The development of this clinical trial demonstrates the power of sustained research investment in rare retinal diseases, said Jason Menzo, CEO of the Foundation Fighting Blindness. Each new clinical trial brings us closer to our mission of providing treatments and cures for blinding diseases. Through the generosity of donors, the Foundation Fighting Blindness has been instrumental in advancing research into MERTK-related RP and supporting innovative gene therapy approaches. The Foundation's commitment to funding early-stage research and clinical development has helped pave the way for promising treatments like OPG-X-MERTK to reach clinical trials. In 2021, the RD Fund, the venture philanthropy arm of the Foundation Fighting Blindness, launched Opus Genetics as a patient-focused gene therapy company targeting inherited retinal diseases. In 2024, Opus Genetics was acquired and is now publicly traded. I finally have time in this program to read the transcript of an NPR interview that was conducted in December of 2025. 35 years after ADA, people with disabilities still find hotels unaccommodating. Lila Fidel, host. NPR's investigations team has heard complaints over and over again from people who use wheelchairs. They book hotel rooms online or by phone, and then when they show up, the hotel doesn't actually have the room they need. NPR's Joseph Shapiro has details. Joseph Shapiro's byline, hotels are required by law to be accessible for guests who use wheelchairs. It's been 35 years since the American with Disabilities Act became law, but an NPR investigation found that hotels fail people in wheelchairs again and again. I met wheelchair users at a conference about disability and technology. Soundbite. Quoting Brittany Wendling. Hey, good morning, everyone. Thank you for that lovely introduction. Shapiro, at a hotel outside of Washington, D.C., like Brittany Wendling, who works for Iowa State University. Wendling, when you reserve an accessible room online, when you show up, oftentimes it is not available. Or the staff look at you like you don't know what you're talking about. And it's a scramble to try to get something that is available. But yeah, that happens almost every single time for me. 50% of the time for me. Shapiro, that was the biggest issue of the 200 people who use wheelchairs, scooters, or other mobility devices who responded to an NPR survey. They show up at a hotel, and there's no accessible room available as promised, or the room that's called accessible has design flaws so they can't fully use it. There are many other problems. So what's your number one issue when you get to a hotel room? Henry Claypool, oh, it's a long list. First thing I'm interested in is making sure there's a roll-in shower that is barrier-free that you can actually roll in and out of in the chair. Shapiro, often it's not. That's Henry Claypool. He's a disability policy consultant from Virginia. Cardin Wyckoff is a member of Atlanta's City Council. Card and Wyckoff. I flew in really late. I arrived at the hotel at about 11 o'clock. I was really tired and ready to go to bed. And as I walked into the room, the bed height was too high. Shapiro, Wyckoff doesn't have the strength to lift herself into a bed more than a few inches taller than the seat of her wheelchair. Wyckoff, so I had to wait 20 minutes for them to come and change the bed. The bedstand underneath it, sometimes they're not movable, and I actually have to change hotels. Shapiro, we heard about many repeated issues. Doors too heavy to open, shampoos and soaps out of reach, electrical outlets, window shades, thermostats all too high. John Wodach, efforts have been made over the past 35 years to have the hotel industry know what it is that's required of them. Shapiro, that's John Wodach. 35 years ago, when the Americans with Disabilities Act became law, he started the Justice Department office to enforce it. He says disabled travelers shouldn't keep running into the same problems, that hotels know what to do. Chirag Shah, ultimately, our business, we want to get it right for all travelers, all guests that come to our hotels. Shapiro, Chirag Shah at the American Hotel and Lodging Association, the trade group for hotels, and I acknowledge that hotels don't always get it right. Shah, hearing those experiences from your listeners is something that we are attentive to and would welcome learning more about specific circumstances as well. Shapiro, hotels have done a lot. They've widened doorways, built bathrooms to fit wheelchairs, set aside those accessible rooms. But we found people who report they're exhausted by the frequent problems at hotels. People like Eileen Schock, a retired teacher from Schenectady, New York. Eileen Schock, you feel that you're being treated as a second-class citizen. It's not a nice feeling. Shapiro, Schock uses a wheelchair after two strokes. She went to her mother's funeral in Asheville, North Carolina, and found the hotel room that she had called about in advance wasn't accessible as promised. She couldn't use the room's toilet without help from her husband or daughter. The grab bars were in the wrong place. She couldn't get into the shower. She got sponge baths for 3 days, and she couldn't reach the tall bed from her wheelchair. The hotel gave her an uncomfortable cot instead. She avoids hotels now. Schock, with that experience, I don't travel. Shapiro, but most people who use wheelchairs do travel. They told us they depend on hotels, and they want to travel more for work, for fun, to visit friends and family. Joseph Shapiro, NPR News. Copyright 2025 by NPR. All rights reserved. Visit our website, terms of use, and permissions pages at www.npr.org for further information. Accuracy and availability of NPR transcripts may vary. Transcript text may be revised to correct errors or match updates to audio. Audio on NPR.org may be edited after its original broadcast or publication. The authoritative record of NPR's programming is the audio record. Posted on February 4th by ACB.org, report put out by the GAO. Today, the Government Accountability Office, GAO, released a new report examining the challenges schools are facing to make assistive technology available for students with disabilities. This report was requested by House Committee on Education and Workforce Ranking Member Robert C. Bobby Scott, Virginia 03. Under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA, students with disabilities are required to have access to assistive technology and services necessary to receive a free, appropriate public education with no cost to the parent. Assistive technologies such as pencil grips, calculators, and screen readers can help students with disabilities participate more effectively at school. This new report details how insufficient time and opportunities for training, staffing issues, technology issues, and funding constraints hindered students' access to assistive technology. Assistive technology is critical to helping students with disabilities fully participate in their school environment. This report demonstrates that school districts are struggling to implement assistive technology to comprehensively address student needs, said Ranking Member Scott. Unfortunately, the Trump administration's actions to dismantle the Department of Education, ED, will exacerbate challenges students with disabilities, parents, and schools are already experiencing. School districts rely on a robust, well-funded ED to implement IDEA and ensure that students with disabilities and their families are informed of the resources available to them. We appreciate Ranking Member Scott's leadership in requesting a report focused on access to assistive technology, AT, for students with disabilities in K-12 schools, said David Dicker, D-I-K-T-E-R, Executive Director of the Assistive Technology Industry Association, ATIA. The findings confirm what we have long heard anecdotally. Too many families are unaware of their child's right to AT in school, and school teams lack the resources to provide AT and train all stakeholders in its use. ATIA remains committed to advocating for increased IDEA Part D funding to ensure schools have access to strong technical assistance as the law requires, and to partnering with AT developers, schools, and families so every child with a disability can access the AT they need to learn and thrive. ED was created in 1979 to protect and defend students' civil rights, including students with disabilities. Prior to laws guaranteeing a free and appropriate public education to students with disabilities, which ED enforces, only 1 in 5 students with disabilities received an education in the United States. The GAO report demonstrates how a cohesive, well-staffed ED is key to providing students with disabilities and their families with the resources that they require to pursue an education. To read the full report entitled Students with Disabilities, Assistive Technologies, Challenges, and Resources in Selected School Districts and Schools, click on the hot link. Also from acb.org, Supporting Voting Rights, posted February 6, 2026. ACB submitted a letter to Rhode Island state leadership urging them to pass legislation for continued access to accessible electronic ballot return options for voting. The bill has now been passed in the Rhode Island State House. We hope the support letter will help encourage the state Senate to pass the bill and get it across the finish line. ACB has shared our letter on the ACB website under Advocacy Activity. Please read the press release below. House passes O'Brien bill protecting electronic ballots for disabled and military voters. State House, Providence, Rhode Island. Representative William W. O'Brien's bill that continues to let disabled and military voters utilize electronically transmitted ballots was passed by the House today. The amount of people who participate in our elections goes up when we make voting easier. This is especially true for our brave members of the military serving our democracy and our residents who are disabled and unable to get to the polls. This bill is particularly important to disabled veterans, such as those who are blind, since this legislation will allow them to vote independently without anyone else's help, affording them the voting privacy that so many of us take for granted. The bill will allow these individuals to continue to vote in a safe, secure, convenient, and independent way so that their voices are heard on Election Day, said Representative O'Brien, Democrat, District 54, North Providence. The legislation, 2026-H7007, would allow eligible disabled and military voters to continue to utilize electronically transmitted ballots as originally enacted in 2022. The existing law, which expired on December 31, 2025, and was also sponsored by Representative O'Brien, states that eligible disabled voters shall be entitled to electronically receive and return their mail ballot using the same electronic transmission system used by voters covered under the Uniformed and Overseas Citizens Absentee Voting Act, UOCAVA. The electronic system chosen by the Secretary of State to accomplish this initiative must have had one or more independent security reviews and meets the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, cybersecurity framework guidelines. I have run out of time for this week's Vision News. I hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next week. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Happy Valentine's Day. Day.